Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf in Washington, where Penn State will take on Georgetown tonight at 6:30 on, beginning at 6 o'clock. Then make the trip back overnight and get ready for tomorrow's show and then Saturday's game with Indiana at Beaver Stadium at noon with a 10:30 airtime. All right. Our high school roundtable in just a few moments, but first, our play-by-play call of the day.
Morant goes in the backcourt to get the loose basketball. Down to 12 on the game clock. Morant working on Rozier. Vet on rookie. 8 seconds. 7 seconds. Morant. Double team comes. Goes at Cody Martin. Into the lane. Hangs in the air. Gets it onto the window.
No!
It
falls
in! The bucket as Ja Morant splits three Hornet defenders for a go-ahead left-handed finger roll.
Second overall pick in the NBA draft out of Murray State, Ja Morant with the game winner last night at our play-by-play call of the day. Well, two of our guys do a lot of play-by-play, and one does a lot of covering of games. We welcome in Todd Hummel, Daily Item, Justin Michaels, voice of Lewisburg football on 100.9 The Valley, and Kevin Herr, the voice of Shikellamy football and the state award winner for doing that job on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Gentlemen, welcome. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, hey. Steve.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
All right, so let's start with this. Todd, I want to start with you. Pennsylvania is one of the few states that's seen a slight increase in participation over the last 10 years, according to the New York Times article, of 2%. In reality, in the Valley, what do you see participation rates?
I was a little surprised, actually, when I saw that. We were just talking here before we went on the air that, it seems like, participation around here, at least, it has been down over the last couple of years. Like Selinsgrove Grove State Championship here in 2009, I think there was nearly 70 on the roster, and this season's team 10 years later has, I think it had 45 or something like that. So, yeah, it seems that participation is a little down around here. I'm interested to see where those gains were, specifically where those gains would have been made in the state.
Which now brings me to the JV part. How much do any of you know about JV participation, and are there now fewer JV games being played than ever before?
Yeah, that's something that Justin and I talk about quite a bit. There's been a lot fewer JV games over the last, I would say, 5 years. Bloomsburg's a good example. Yeah. Here's a team that didn't even have an opportunity to play a playoff game because they couldn't field enough players.
Yeah, and I know for Lewisburg, you got a 10-game schedule, and I think they probably only participated in about four, maybe five max JV games, and really where that hurts is it hurts the development of the program. And again, what will happen is if kids are not getting those opportunities to develop and be a part of it, maybe the next year you do not see them coming back out.
And that's the big thing.
That's where the participation really gets hurt.
That's where participation is really hurt, is when you don't play those JV games, you have guys that are basically blocking dummies all through the week.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. It's just that they're there to be the defense or block or whatever and be the bag or hold the bag. These are the guys that are going through the grunt work all week long and never get a chance to see the field on a Friday night. Well, Monday night was their night, and that game's gone.
Yeah.
So now, instead of playing a 10-game schedule where at least you see the field maybe on Monday nights and once in a while on Friday nights, now you're only seeing the field maybe twice on a Monday night through a whole season. And a lot of players just don't want to go through the effort for just a couple of nights of playing.
Yeah.
I talked to Coach Roth out at Southern Columbia, said this, and so did Justin Van Fleet up at Loyal Sock. They've gone to the Allentown area to play some JV games this season, and those teams have come up here just to play those games and just to get some competition in at that level.
And even at the junior high level, we're seeing teams. I know Shikellamy played one of the Northern Lehigh or one of those came up, and I know they were coming up to this area at least two or three times because they couldn't find teams down in the Allentown area.
Well, nobody plays freshman football anymore.
That's a great point.
We're talking about smaller rosters, you know. 10 years ago, that was 10th, 11th, 12th grade numbers, and now it's usually 9th through 12th.
We are also seeing a time where in practice, and this happens at the NFL level, it's mandated by the NFLPA, we're seeing it in college, and I'm sure we're seeing it in high school, where they don't want you hitting as often. It's a safety issue, but they don't want you hitting as often. In the opinion of the three of you, is it affecting in any way the quality of the game you see on Friday night?
You know, I think, Steve, it does. I really do. I think from more of a defensive side with the tackling aspect, again, when you're not hitting, you're not getting that form. You can hit a bag, you know, and you can do different drills, but until it's that live contact and you're making it realistic on those Friday nights underneath those lights, I think it really does affect it. That's where I see it on each and every Friday night is the ability to tackle.
And I agree on the defensive side, but what I see more as for the entire play of the game, it's special teams. Mm-hmm. That's the area that's really not seeing a lot of practice time now, especially in the summer months with the shortened season now to warm up in August. You're not seeing teams, especially early in the year, practicing kickoffs, kick returns, punt returns, those type of things. I think it's in the special teams is where you see the fundamentals really fall, not just tackling, but everything.
And that's something we were just talking beforehand as we went on, is just with the governing body, the PIAA, to when they allow you to start your practice to that first competition. It's such a short period of time. Right now, you got that first week of heat acclimation.
That's right.
And then you get a week of practice basically going into the first competition. You're allowed one scrimmage, and then that following week, you're underneath the lights, you know, regular season. So as far as preparation, it's pretty tough, you know, to get on the page. So guys aren't really hitting the peak until, you know, week 8, 9, 10 of the high school
exactly
season.
Exactly right, yeah.
Well, you know, the other part of that is, you know, they had a chance to keep the second scrimmage, and I think they decided that they wanted to expand the playoffs. And I think I talked about this in a column a couple weeks ago. I think in hindsight, that was probably a bad decision. I think that, you know, that second scrimmage right now is probably more important to the sport than these expanded playoffs.
You know, that first scrimmage was always that first scrimmage was always like 20 plays, moving on. And then the next scrimmage was always more like game situation. Now you're doing a first half that's 20 plays for the other team, taking a little bit of a break, trying to sneak a JV squad in there now, then taking another break, and then playing a game situation before you wrap it up. It's like trying to jam two preseason games into one.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the playoff part and when they start. Do you feel that there is a relevancy to the regular season when there are so many schools that get in under 500 records?
You know, it's tough to say that there is. I mean, the only team in our daily item coverage area that didn't make the playoffs was Milton, I believe, and you know, they win one more game and they probably get in over one of the Northern Tier teams in the eighth seed. And you know, we saw what Bloomsburg forfeit a playoff game and not have enough people for a playoff game. Somebody in District 11 forfeited to Williams Valley. You know, Marion Catholic, that's who it was, forfeited to Williams Valley rather than play a playoff game. So, yeah, I really think that they have to. You know, I'm not one of the blame six classes guys. I think it's one of the, there's pluses and there's minuses to it in the different sports. But I really think it has not been great for high school football in Pennsylvania.
That's where I slightly disagree with you, Todd. It doesn't happen really often that you and I do that, but I do think it has a lot to do with the six, and I don't think it has a lot to do with the six classification statewide. I think it does in the rural areas, and I think that's where you're breaking up the single A, double A. I mean, I look at Shikellamy playing 4A football, you know, and playing 5A basketball. to me, I mean, maybe it's because I've just been, you know, I'm looking at things historically, but 5A teams were these enormous high schools. You know, they were not Shikellamy. It did not seem like they should be a 5A school. But in this new classification for basketball, girls and boys, they're 5A. They have to go play in Allentown to play their district playoffs in the Allentown area in District 11. In football, they're a 4A, and there's not that many big enough schools. There's not that many big schools in 4A, so you only have five schools. Four go to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, Kevin. It is, you know, at the 3A where Lewisburg is, there's 11 teams in that classification. Eight of the 11 are making the playoffs. And to me, with the six classifications, it really has watered down the level of competition. Again, I just feel, you know, personally, from a perspective of a fan of the sport and fan of sports, is you got to have that criteria where it's a minimum of a 500 winning percentage at least to get in. I know years ago that's, you know, pretty much was the stepping stone. Things have changed, and again, you want to create opportunities, but at the same time, let's look at the 2A where, you know, opening week we had Southern Columbia taking on Towanda, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the score was 42-0 in the first quarter. They only ran a few offensive plays. I think it was less than a dozen offensive plays. So that's where that concerning point is, too. You want kids, that yes, to be a part, but at the same time, risk of injury really when you got two different teams at two different levels there.
There weren't too many first-round games that were really competitive, Todd. I don't know.
I was going to say,
can you think of one that you guys were covering that was even within two touchdowns?
I was going to say, we did not... The only game in the first round of the District 4 playoffs that was within a touchdown was, I think, Muncie and Sayre.
All the
3A first round games, I don't think the losers in the games didn't score an offensive touchdown. The only score came out of the three teams that lost was a fumble return by Lewisburg. Mm-hmm. That was the only touchdown that anybody that lost scored in the first round of that. So yeah, there was not a lot of very close games. I mean, you saw Schick and Jersey Shore. I saw Midwest and Seals Grove that week. I mean, they were both Mercy Rule contests. Some of this decision-making process was flawed as well. It just, you know, like we talk about in other sports, these coaches don't want these buys either. You know, they maybe a little more in football, but, you know, basketball's opted to, you know, there has to be eight teams in that quarterfinal. So you know.
And you even have some sub-500 teams potentially making it because of that.
You're skipping, like, Athens. I think Athens and Central are the only two schools that I know of that have that you have to be 500 to play in the playoffs. And, you know, and that causes, you know, those teams don't make it. Didn't a 1-22 Midwest team make it last year or the year before into the playoffs?
I can't remember that one, but for sure what year that was, but I thought somebody did.
But yeah. So, yeah, some of this comes down to, you know, not wanting to just simply have a bye sometimes, which is strange to me, too. Because you think Southern would have gotten more out of a scrimmage with each other than they did out of the Towanda game. They scored eight on eight of nine possessions.
All three of you played high school football?
I did not.
You did not. Kevin, you did?
Lower levels, yeah. Yeah.
I don't care what level. Todd?
Yeah, I did play in high school.
No, I did not.
Right. Okay, you did not. Kevin Kugler and I, and you hear Kevin on Westwood all the time and Fox and BTN, Kevin and I talked for about an hour today, and this was not a Penn State coach we were talking about, but he brought up a coach that he just talked to within the past 10 days. And he said, it's really hard for me to sit here today and discipline players with portals and things like that. He said, along the way, he says, in terms of discipline or running them or anything like that, when the three of you talk to coaches, do they give you the same impression that they've had to change how they coach?
I can tell you right now, from looking at practices that I've seen and what I experienced, oh, yeah. I mean, now that's been 20, 30 years. That's like 30 years ago, but there's a lot that's changed. I mean, I don't really see teams running sprints like we used to run. I mean, I still have nightmares of sprints.
I, I,
We're still waiting for you to finish the first one.
Yes, I think most of my teammates are, too.
There's no screamers anymore. I'm trying to think of
Well, you can't.
Trying to think of a high school coach that I had, even in, I graduated high school in 1993, that would survive in the current era. Between Bill Scott, Jim Bettle at the time, Glenn Fogel at Mifflinburg back then.
Sure.
It's weird. I forget where I was at, where there was a coach screaming at his players on the, I think it was a basketball game last year, and it was stunning because it just doesn't happen anymore. And,
yeah, you just don't see it.
Yeah. We had the controversy around here with Danville, where Kevin and I have discussed this ad nauseum. Where I've certainly had. I played basketball. I've been doing this for 30 years. I mean, I've certainly heard worse than what happened at Danville. But nowadays you can't say that to kids, and that. I hate to sound like an old fuddy-duddy when you talk about kids today and millennials and all that stuff, but it's a different time now, and I think you kind of have to learn to reach this generation. I had somebody reach out to me when I wrote a column about something similar that's one of the things that they think is causing the participation problems in high school sports is nobody wants to practice for 3 weeks in a row. It's a part of the AAU thing. You get to play six games in a day, and you're not playing games and you're practicing, and that's not what a modern kid wants to do. They want instant gratification.
That's the big thing right there. I think that's really hurt is the instant gratification. That the process, nobody wants to put the time in and be developed and come up over time. They want to be that immediate starter. And if they're not, they don't want to be participating in JV. And then, they'll quit. Again, and they're not getting that playing time. They'll quit, and you lose them. So from a coaching standpoint, I think coaching philosophies have really changed, too. As we joke and, carried on, you look back in the 70s, 80s, and even in the 90s. The techniques that were used by coaches, it's a different day and age. The way I coach today, my athletes versus when I was an athlete myself, it's totally night and day. I remember being a freshman, my first high school match, I beat an opponent that I had never beaten in my career before. I came off the mat winning by a technical fall, and one of my assistant coaches told me that was garbage, that was disgusting, and you're going to have a long season if you think that was good. And today...
That put it in perspective.
And today, if I would use that type of reverse psychology one of my student athletes, I would be getting called into the school, and I would be let go. But again, you see it with sports today. The way it coaches, the way it is. Again, times change, with the process, technology. It's really changed the game.
It's interesting because Joe Paterno, and of course I was a witness on that practice field for, decades, all right? Joe Paterno yelled at players. He never swore.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Never swore. He yelled at him. He made his points, right? But he never swore along the way. Okay, now here comes the difficult part of this question. What role, pro and con, are the parents playing in this?
That's a tough one because...
Do you want the politically correct answer or do you want the real one?
I just want an answer because obviously we know about your experience as a parent.
My experience was is he going to play this week? I just want to know. No? Okay, I'm not...
I thought Ferlazzo... Did you think he was great, Sean? Ferlazzo was great that year.
Crushed him.
Loved him. Loved him.
That's why he was the fill-in for me.
It was like it was decades ago.
And that's the
every game seems like a decade.
With a lot of sports, everything is so subjective. So, again, those parents feel that their child is the best. And, again, you want nothing but the best for your child.
And I said pro or con. I didn't say it's all con, okay?
Yeah. It's one of those difficult things. I'm very fortunate the sport that I coach, you win or lose to get a spot. Obviously with football, as we're discussing football, it's very subjective. And, right. That's, from the coaching staff to put it out there. But, again, you got a parent out there that feels that their kid is the best. They're not at practice every day. They don't see the contributions or the efforts that they're putting in.
Great point.
And that's the hard part. But, I think you just, as a coach, you got to really, at the beginning of the season, each and every season, let your parents know that, hey, listen, I'm doing a job that No coach is doing it for the money. Let's just put that out there right now. It's a year-round job at any level. If you're coaching football, especially a head high school coach, you're putting the time in the weight room in the off season, and you factor in the compensation. It's pennies on the dollar, even if it's that. So the thing with it is, you're doing it for a lot of reasons. One, it's probably the effect that your coach has had on you. You know, the mentorship and the life skills that you develop through sports, and the friendships, and it's your way of giving back. But again, I think you let the parents know, just from a standpoint, is you wouldn't be here if your best interest wasn't for the kids. And I think if somebody's in there for a lot of other reasons, then they're in it for the wrong purpose.
I think the other part of that is, some of these administrations and school boards have to play a role in this as well. And I don't think when it comes to this parent-coach stuff that the school boards or the administrations probably give coaches enough support sometimes. And it really seems in this day and age that, it's the parents always right, the students always right. And I think there has to be, I think you have to kind of figure out a balance where, there's a way to take your problems about something so, nothing goes wrong, that, the coach is not being abusive. But I also think sometimes, as soon as there's a complaint, it's the coach's fault, and in no way does the child or the parent, playing any blame in it.
Steve and I used to joke about this an awful lot when my son was playing, and we all knew that he was not a great player. He would be the first one to tell you that, so he wasn't expecting to get played every day, and we weren't expecting to see him play every day. But I did, in that time, I watched parents come up to coaches and say, how come my kid isn't getting in the game, or how come my kid didn't play here, or how come you pulled him out here? I just, not that I'm better than anybody else, but I just never had that mindset, because I've been around coaches enough that I know if there's a reason they're not playing, it's because A, they're not at that level, or B, maybe they didn't have a great week of practice. There's more to it than just, why is my kid not playing? Instead of asking the question, hey, what is my kid not doing well enough, or what can he improve on or she improve on to be a better player? And I don't think those questions are asked that
often. You hit the nail on the head, Kevin. I think that's the biggest thing, is it's, as most parents today, they want the best for the kids, and I completely understand that. Being a father of three children, I want the best for my kids too. But you got to be, realistic, and you got to have that trust in the coaches and the coaching staff that, again, go back to the point, is they're there every single day with those kids, 2-3 hours a day, so they know what's going on, and who knows better than those guys that are there with them every day. So as a parent, they need to be supportive, of the program. Because, again, what does it do if they're coming and complaining to the coach or creating a hardship? One, it could affect ultimately the whole program, because they go and complain to a school board, and next thing you know, that coach is out. Then you have a transition, okay? And who does it affect? It doesn't affect just one. It affects the whole student body there.
And then you have internal issues.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have an internal
separation
issue
with the teammates.
Absolutely.
All right, let's take a break. We have news coming up out of the hour. More to come. We have several other questions we're going to ask of our esteemed panels. We continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 at Hummel's Wharf in Washington, literally 5 blocks away from the White House. As Penn State gets ready to take on Georgetown tonight at 6:30 on, beginning at 6 in the Gavitt games, and then back into State College about 1, 2 in the morning. And I'll sit down with James Franklin tomorrow morning at 9:30 up at his office, and then noon on Saturday with a 10:30 airtime for Penn State and Indiana. Our topic, high school football. Todd Hummel joining us from the Daily Item. Justin Michaels, the voice of Lewisburg football at 100.9 The Valley, and the award-winning Kevin Herr, the voice of Shikellamy football on News Radio 1070 WKOK. In recent years, is attendance up or down at games?
Down.
Yeah, I agree with Todd. It's definitely down. Some of the games this year, you look, even when we'd host them on home, I look across the stands and Some teams just don't travel.
That, I was going to say, I think attendance might be for the home team flat. But I think for road teams, that is where I think there's definitely a downspin. You know, so I guess the overall numbers would be down. But I see with Shikellamy, the home games are still as well attended as I can remember. The road team very sparse on that side.
Well, you were.
And you see it a little bit.
Did you do Loyal Sox Central Columbia last week?
Yes.
And how nobody was there for Loyal Sox?
Yeah. Loyal Sox had a very, very thin crowd, and Central did not travel well either. But then again, there's not a whole lot of stands on the other side for visiting stands.
Well, but that was surprising for a home playoff game how little people were there.
Yeah. There was definitely plenty of good seats still available with that one.
And you know, I think that's across all sports. I mean, when you know you're a wrestling guy, when I was a little kid,
yeah,
I mean that Shikellamy Fieldhouse used to be packed.
You used to not have to be get able there to at wrestle. Five.
What Lime Mountain and Shikellamy down at Lime Mountain because the gym was too small.
You'd have to go out to Shamokin, and that's the thing is, and as I think you said, Todd, is I think you really see it. You know, from a perspective, I know my parents would never miss any of my events. You know, they were always there. Now has that changed? You know, over times with dual income families, you know, just can't get there. You know, the change in. You know, the radio, obviously carrying more games, you know, those traditions have changed. So I don't think it's good, you know, because, again, you know, the tradition of Friday night football, you know, something special. It gets a community involved. And especially when a team has, you know, a winning season, what it really brings together. I'll give, you know, example this year in the District 4-3A. You know, Warrior Run has not had a winning season since 2006. This year they were the 4 seed, hosted us, you know, Lewisburg, first round of the playoffs. And they had a real nice crowd there. You know, it really brought the community together, and it was encouraging to see. They had great numbers this year and, you know, had success, and it's nice to see.
We saw a situation with Southern Columbia, which has been incredibly dominant for a long time. They were going to play Shikellamy, and then everybody agreed to come up with a better solution. And then it took a while to null it out. Are administrations and school boards properly engaged with their coaches and their players?
I think the Southern team is so special this year that I think
I understand, but there's a lot more going into this than just that question. Okay, there's a lot that goes across the board here.
I think it goes to the next level up, Steve. I think you have to, especially in the example that you gave, I think now you have to look at the way multiple administrations that make up these leagues and districts and the way they're handling things or the way they set precedents. I think that's where a little bit of a difference is.
I think people's problem with it was more how it came about and how it happened than what the actual point of it was, is what happened as well.
Yeah, my
meaning what?
Well, I think some people feel that when they put the game together, that they didn't go through the proper channels, and the idea behind it of, you know, not getting kids hurt and was maybe the proper idea, but the execution failed a little bit.
In this example, I would have rather have seen it happen before the season started than during the season. If that was truly the biggest issue along the way, then I could understand that. But, you know, my biggest thing was the conference came up with a rule, well, it wasn't filed properly. Well, if the district was okay with it and the PIAA was okay with it, but the Heartland Conference said the papers weren't filed properly, where did something fall through? That's the part that I didn't understand about the whole thing. That's where I think there was a bit of a disconnect between conference officials, district officials, and PIAA officials.
And I think that's also the function of how our conference is run around here. The athletic directors don't have a lot of say it's administrators that make decisions that maybe are not involved in the day-to-day athletic activities. of a school, because you know how, you know, if you're the principal of the high school, there's a heck of a lot more you have to be concerned about than the athletics. So sometimes, you know, you're getting meeting minutes, and this is what you have to make a decision on. This is the rules, and you know, I just think it's a little different, just because I don't know if you approach this, if this is a decision that is made by any of these football teams, you know, in any other season than maybe this one.
What is more important, conference or district?
In the overall perspective, or what it should be,
I would say district.
Well, that's going to be my next question.
Right.
Okay, so just everybody, just follow my lead here. I'll take you home.
I definitely think it's the district level. Again, conference. You have different classifications playing in, you know, the same conference at the end of the year, where it's leveled out a little bit more. You know, I think districts, you throw the records out, and, you know, that's really where you're leaving your legacy. You know, we were here on the break joking about, you know, youth, junior high, how everybody gets caught up in wins and losses there, and the only people that really remember that is those individuals that were currently involved. You don't, you're leaving your legacy. How did you finish in the district tournament? How did you finish in the state tournament? You know, 2011, Lewisburg, you know, had a great run, made it to the state semifinals in football, and that team is talked about quite often, you know, and that was, couldn't tell you what their win and loss record was throughout the season, but you do know that they made the state semifinals that year, and the athletes that were on that team.
I think the conference, this is strictly my opinion, I think the conference has become irrelevant. I don't think there's any interest. Let me rephrase that. I think there's interest in winning it, but if you don't win it, it's not a big deal. As long as you make the district playoffs or you have a shot at a district championship, and I think that's part of the problem. I would love to see somehow, and this is going to take some massive reorganization to be able to do it, I would love to see the conference champion have to represent somebody in a district playoff or represent that conference instead of having the way we have it set up now. But I know that that's going to take a monumental change.
Well, you know, I think since we've gone to this bigger conference, we've also lost, lost something that it was splitting it up classification-wise means that, you know, Selins Grove Danville was a big football rivalry for how many years, and now Selins Grove and Danville don't play every year, or just started playing again. You know, Schick and Danville.
That's a great example right there.
You know, that's off and on. I think splitting this conference up by classifications rather than how, you know, the old CSC where it was, you know, Selins Grove, Schick, and Lewisburg, and everybody, Mifflinburg, and everybody played together, and now, you know, every 2 years you don't know, you might lose a rival for a while. I mean, we've been lucky to keep Southern Columbia and Mount Carmel for the most part. They've done a great job keeping, you know, Mount Carmel and the Cold Bucket game too when those divisions split up. But, you know, I think we've lost a little something in that as well.
I think that's huge for the sport, is those rivalry games. You got to have it because it gets the communities involved, and you may not have a student athlete on the team or, you know, even coming up through the ranks, but again, it's that community pride and getting everybody out there on that Friday night, and it just brings everybody together, and that's how you build the sport.
Which then brings to the next part. Idealistically, what should be more important, a conference championship or the districts? Idealistically.
Well, like I said, I know it's almost impossible to do, but I'd love to see you have to win a conference championship to make it to the next level, which would in this case be districts. A lot of things have to change for that to happen, though.
Yeah,
because nobody knows what the point thing means. Nobody does.
Yeah, that and the formula got harder.
Yeah.
It got harder to figure out.
Of course it did. Of course it did, because non-football people were trying to think it up.
I mean, I'm trying to create a spreadsheet, and even my spreadsheet can't calculate it right.
No, I took one look at that formula last year, and that other people are going to have to figure that out for me.
You know what this reminds me of, and this setup and what we're talking about right now is, I think, what we were talking about in the probably mid to early 90s when you could go Eastern Conference or you could go to the district championship, and then there was a point system that allowed you to go to the state playoff then. But everybody went Eastern Conference in this side of the state because it was all more prestige. Nobody went District 4. before, and then all of a sudden they said, nope, the only way through the state playoffs is through the district playoffs. And Eastern Conference has become irrelevant. It's become the other option.
Well, it's where all the teams that it's the NIT.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the eight teams that don't make the district playoffs play in the East, end up in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, and because of the six, the breakdown the way we have it now, you end up with a 1-9 team or, you know, and a 2-8 team in the Eastern Conference.
Actually, but Schick would have made it last year, right, if they would have wanted to play in the playoffs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so now when it comes to the state tournament, I was talking with George Landis a couple of years ago. He came over to talk to Jack Hamm and me. And George stops by all the time, baby. And at one point, Jack said, how many more games do you have to play? He says, well, to win the state championship, we're going to have to, you know, win six. Okay, so let's break that down. In other words, 38% of your season ends up being the playoffs. Are the playoffs too long, and do they need to be restructured?
I think definitely. I think it becomes down to, and I hate to say this, but it comes down to more of a business decision by the governing body, by the PIAA, where I think, you know, it's where it's more of, you know, the revenue driver at the gates.
It's a little known breakdown when you look at the brackets that to the Mount Carmel Southern Columbia game is a District 4 championship game, but it's also a first round state playoff game.
I was going to say, so it's a 3A championship game.
Yeah, 3A
so is
the same
so
way.
So it's Montour's with
yeah,
Lowell's
yeah,
right?
Same way. Yeah, I was. That's the same way because of the way it is. So it's like if your district championship game is actually a state playoff first round game, to me, there's something kind of messed up there.
I think this goes back to. It partially goes back to the six classifications, and I also think it also goes back to maybe the districts are obsolete at this point too. Maybe some of it needs to be redrawn a little bit because, you know, especially since it's split this way, like there's hardly any Class A schools on the eastern side of the state, and there's a lot of Class A schools on the western side of the state, so that messes up the bracket. And the opposite is true in the big schools. You know, all the 6A schools are either in the Pittsburgh suburbs, the Philly suburbs, Allentown, or Erie, and that ends up being, you know, that ends up putting buys into these brackets that screws things up too. But yeah, the season is way too long, and they you know, I can remember one of the Southern State title games ending on December 18th. So they've done a much better job of shortening the season, but I still think we flow way too much into winter sports. I mean, those Southern kids aren't getting to basketball or wrestling or anything like that until the first game of the season is already being the first game of the winter season is the Friday night of the state football championships, and I think we need to get away from that.
And Steve, to take that one step further, you have teams like Southern Columbia that are typically in the state playoff run, or at least think they will be on a regular basis, and they're usually right. They're actually backloading their basketball schedule, and while everybody else is wrapping up getting ready for districts, they still have three or four more games to play.
Okay, so now we've sat here and we've identified a series of problems, all right, which has led to something that we cherish still being exciting on Friday nights, but maybe doesn't have the same cachet it had 10 years ago. So if I were to sit you down in front of the district, sit you down in front of administrators, sit you down in front of the PIAA, and they said, look, let's brainstorm some ideas. As three people that are around it all the time, what are some ideas you'd like to come up with that you think, if implemented, could help?
I think one of the things that would help thing is kind of what Todd said a few minutes ago. If we take out the district playoffs and start getting conference champions come in and start your state tournament with conference champions, that might be a way to at least not only shorten the season, but make those playoff games a little bit more competitive.
I also think, you know, we didn't really hit on the safety factor of it, but I think they've made the game much safer, and I really think that they really have to do a better job of getting that out there.
I agree.
That you know, it's not the, you know, kid, they're not hitting as much. Yeah, the kid, you know, they're they know about concussions. You know, you're not sending a kid getting his
coaches know about concussions.
Yeah, you're not getting his bell rung, getting sent back in. You got to get the safety stuff out there. And again, I think like I said earlier, I think that getting that second scrimmage back is much more important than these expanded playoffs. It's just that, you know, I think there needs to be a little more practice time at the beginning of the season, you know, to make it a better product later on in the year.
I agree. I think what you said, Todd, that's one of the things I just think the overall impression is education on the safety aspect. Obviously, you know, at all levels, you start at the highest level with the NFL. They've recognized, you know, the issue, the problem, a big topic of that CTE. You know, again, the reconditioning of helmets being done every year. You know, it's a large expense, but obviously it's the safety, the different penalties, you know, protecting the players, you know, targeting. It's a, you know, big topic we talk about. So I think, again, they've taken the necessary steps to protect the athletes. But again, I think what they need to do is continue to push those areas and educate the parents to really, you know, understand that you look at what are leading causes of concussions. You know, sport of soccer, you know, non-traditional sport 20 years ago has really grown here in the United States and really starting to take numbers away from football in some degrees, but the opportunity for concussion in soccer is just probably just as close, if not more, than a football player.
The concussion numbers for soccer are actually higher.
That's what I thought.
I mean, a lot of people don't realize that. Now, you know, again, you're not protected up top, so, you know, there are actually more concussions actually in soccer than in football. That never comes up. It's never talked about. But I think those who have railed on the safety issue in football, number one, have done a good job of getting it out there, and football's had to react to it. You're always trying to make it safer all the time because you want to keep the sport as long as you can. So I give the people credit who have brought up the issue. At the same time, there has to be some credit given to the sport of football itself to get the message out there that they are doing everything they can to make it safer, because those who were responsible for bringing the points up did a good job to make football react to it.
I think one of the reasons I hear for not playing not only football but sports in general is not the concussions. It's not the possibility of injury. It's too hard. It's too much work.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Kevin. I mean, I hear it quite often with athletes in the school as you try to recruit to get them out for sports. Too much work.
Well, I don't have to deal with that. They're already doing work by the time I get to them.
It, you know what? We all love it. High school football to me, and I think, I want to say, was it you, Justin, that said, you know, there's something about being there on a Friday night?
Yeah, it just brings a community together, and that's, I use the Warrior Run as an example. Seeing a little community like that that hasn't had success since 2006 as far as a winning record, but it brings a community together, and there's something to be said. You're creating memories, and, you know, it's part of the journey of life, you know. It's the friendships and those memories that these guys are going to talk about 10, 20, 30 years from now when they're getting together and reminiscing, and it's just something special.
Steve, I have to share this, and I think I did with you years ago, but one of the funniest things that Daniel said to me was, I said, aren't you excited about getting in the game on Friday night? He goes, no. I'm like, why wouldn't you be excited about getting in the game Friday night? He goes, if I mess up, the whole town is there to see it. It was just, and that was his view. It's like Friday night, the whole town showed up.
Yeah. Well, here's something else, too, that should be pointed out in all fairness. There are also more sports than ever before to participate in the high school
level.
Boys lacrosse, and so forth. It's not just the soccer issue when it comes to football. There are more sports than ever to dedicate themselves to. And I also think that you see fewer and fewer athletes playing multiple sports.
Specialization.
It seems like at an early age, they lock in on a sport, and then that's what they do. So, guys, this was a lot of fun. It was extremely informative. The three of you have a depth of knowledge that was very important to bring out. I think you made it an enlightening hour, and I appreciate the time you gave us today very, very much.
Certainly.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you very much, Steve, for the opportunity.
Yeah, you guys were terrific, absolutely terrific. Tomorrow, the show entitled The Voices of Penn State. We'll have Jeff Byers, the voice of Penn State Wrestling. Justin Antwiel, the voice of Lady Lion basketball. Brian Tripp, the voice of ice hockey and baseball. We'll get to know them a bit better. We'll get to know why they get into the jobs that they're into. And we'll also get a little bit of background, not just on them, but also on their teams for the upcoming season. For the first time, all of them together. And we'll have from 3:35 until 4:30 tomorrow the voices of Penn State on the show so that you, the audience, get to know them better, because they're the ones that paint those exciting pictures that make you excited about your respective teams. Our thanks to our great panel. Our thanks to Sean Carey. Back tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hey, you, it's time for Sunbury Motors to eat their remaining 2019 Ford leftovers. Choose from over 20 of the hot-selling Ford Escapes for as low as $17,585. Love compact SUVs? Sunbury Motors has the leader of the pack. The 2019 Ford 4x4 EcoSport, slashed to just $20,525. SMC would give these away, but they know you'd feel guilty. Take up to $9,000 off new 2019 Ford Edges, up to $10,000 off new Ford 2019 Fusions, and up to an amazing $12,000 off on new 2019 Ford Expeditions. That's a whole lot of amazing. Pick from over 65 new 2019 leftover F-150s with total savings up to $14,750 off MSRP on 4x4 Super Cruise. Feast on Sunbury Motors 2019 Ford leftovers by November 30th before they're all gone. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, proudly serving all of Central PA for 105 years. Gobble, gobble, hey.
Your favorite WKOK programs are available as a podcast. Head to the Google Play and Apple Podcast app and search WKOK. Then click subscribe to have all of WKOK's podcasts, like On the Mark and WKOK Sunrise, sent right to your smartphone. This is WKOK Sunbury.